Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Michael is out today. Michael, I just want to thank you once again, my good friend, for the incredible honor and opportunity to fill in for you. I was just telling this to my wife before I got on the show. It's just something I incredibly look forward to. And I got to tell you, Mike, your batteries, because your fight for language, borders, and culture is the seminal fight in America today. We need you. The Savage Nation needs you. And America needs you. My friends, go to michaelsavage.com. There are some absolute, I'm talking must-read, sizzling stories out there. There are two in particular that, again, just to show you how Michael Savage is always on the cutting edge. These are stories that, frankly, the mainstream media are downplaying, but in many ways are cutting to the very heart of the battle that is raging in America today. That between the federal Leviathan and the reassertion of states' rights. The top story: Virginia's Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, rules that police can check immigration status. I urge all of you to read it. It is one of the most important stories happening right now today. Why? Because according now to the Arizona state government, according to Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, Arizona's law is something that Virginia wants to imitate and mimic. And what Ken Cuccinelli is saying is that Virginia can now give the power to local law enforcement in the Old Dominion to be able to check the immigration status of legal and illegal immigrants. In other words, that the state of Virginia is now in a war. It is facing an onslaught of unlimited third world illegal immigration. I know, because living in Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia is just a stone's throw away. Most people, in fact, live in Northern Virginia and work in Washington, D.C. All you have to do is go to Arlington, Alexandria, Herndon, Fairfax. I used to live in Fairfax County. To me, it's almost like it's like a barrio. It's almost like a suburb of Mexico, a ghetto of Mexico. There are illegal immigrants everywhere. My wife and I were shocked. We're literally driving out of our townhome. We're renting a townhome then, and you just see illegal immigrants crossing the highways, crossing the streets. Many of them holding bags. Many of them holding cases of beer. And they're just crossing the streets like it's El Salvador or Mexico. They're even oblivious to the fact that there's oncoming traffic. There's a big fast food franchise. I don't want to give the name because I don't want a very popular fast food franchise. I don't know what it is to be served in English. You cannot order a cheeseburger and French fries in many fast food franchises here in D.C. being served in English. Literally, at this fast food franchise, which is very famous in D.C., I point, I come in, you don't get served in English. I don't know what it is to be served in English. I literally point. Ketchup, yeah, that's what I want. Yeah, mustard, yeah, that's what I want. Yeah, cheeseburger, that's what I want, right there. Yeah. They always get my order wrong, by the way. but let that go. But literally, if I didn't have the finger and going C, C, it's the only C, 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 yeah, C, that's what I want. The only time, I kid you not, that I get served in English when I order a cheeseburger or a hamburger is when I go to Europe. When I fly to France or England for some overseas junket for my newspaper, you know, when I'm there, I say, hey, can I have a cheeseburger? Or I speak French and they can notice my accent. They go, what would you like on your cheeseburger? I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. What do you call it? Mustard? Mayonnaise? What's the other one? Relish. Oh, my God, relish. My friends, we are becoming a third world nation. You are now seeing the transformation of America into a Spanish-speaking, bicultural, binational country. And what the Attorney General of Virginia is saying, we in the states have the right of self-defense. We have a right to protect ourselves from the murderers, the rapists, the drug smugglers, the illegal human traffickers that are destroying our communities and invading our country. And if the federal government will not protect us, then we will reassert our rights as states. Our right to protect our residents, our citizens, from these butchers every day. And my friends, it's not just on the issue of immigration. Just go to michaelsavage.com. This is the second story from the top. Judge lets Virginia Obamacare challenge proceed. I don't know what it is with the Old Dominion. I don't know if the spirit of Robert E. Lee is still alive among many of the citizens in Virginia, but they are now starting to reassert their state sovereignty and their state rights, because now a judge in Virginia has said that Virginia, the state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, has the right to challenge the constitutionality of Obamacare. And what is the government of Virginia's argument? What was it that they contested in court that the judge said they were right to contest and that this should go all the way to the Supreme Court? It is an argument that I have made repeatedly and which the liberal media deliberately ignores. Leave aside that it will lead to mass rationing. We're already seeing the effects of socialized medicine. Leave aside that it is going to lead to massive overcrowding. Leave aside the fact that costs are going to explode. Leave aside that it's a several trillion dollar monstrosity, $3-4 trillion, which is going to bankrupt America, that we can't even afford it. Leave all of that aside. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, you're for socialized medicine. You believe that government command and control over healthcare is the best thing since sliced bread. Here is the problem with Obamacare. It is unconstitutional and illegitimate. This is what the Virginia judge is saying. This is what the state of Virginia is saying. And in fact, there are now 20 other states that are following Virginia's lead. And Virginia's argument is a simple one. Where in the Constitution does it say the federal government has the power to regulate and control health care? And more than that, this to me is the kicker. This to me is the one that settles the issue irrefutably, conclusively. Where in the Constitution does the federal government have the power to force and coerce every citizen in America to purchase a good product or service? Where? Where does the federal government have the power to force you to buy health insurance or buy anything, a car, Coca-Cola, you name it, anything, cheeseburgers, a porno film, condoms, whatever? Where do they have the power to coerce you? They don't. And that's why the bill is illegitimate and unconstitutional. That's why Virginia is challenging it. And my friends, what are we now seeing in America? What is really behind the Tea Party movement? What is behind this huge backlash against Obama's drive towards a socialist superstate? Is it just because deficits are out of control? Partly. Taxes are too high? Partly. opposition to health care, partly, but really it's this. Are we a decentralized republic like our founding fathers wanted, in which the power of the federal government is limited and most of the powers reside in the states and in the people? That's what our founding fathers wanted. It should not be with the federal Leviathan. What the liberals have done since the New Deal is turn the Constitution on its head. And my question to every liberal out there is this. If you acknowledge no limits on the federal government, if it can take over the car sector, if it can take over the banks, if it can take over health care, if it can take over our pensions, where's the limit? What can it not do? If you notice, the only thing the government cannot do, according to the liberals, is protect our poorest border and protect unborn children. Oh, when it comes to abortion, suddenly, we can't do it. We can't do it. It's impossible. It's impossible. When it comes to the southern border, oh, no, no, no. According to these Democrats on Capitol Hill, literally, the term they use is Afghanistan. It's like the mountains of Afghanistan. We can't regulate that border. It's impossible. But on every other aspect of our life, even our bodies, even our health, even which doctors and physicians that we or our families can go to, that they can decide for us now. And so here is Congressman Pete Stark. You want to see what a Marxist leftist he is? You want to see how he believes in unlimited power for the federal government? Faced by his constituents at a town hall meeting, his constituents ask him a very simple question. Where in the Constitution does it say the federal government can regulate and control health care? If you say it can regulate health care, what can it not regulate? Where does the power stop? Look at his answer. Look at the creeping totalitarianism implied in his answer. Boys, roll clip 28, baby.
My question is, how can this law be constitutional? But more importantly than that, if they can do this, what can't they? Is your question they can do any, is your answer that they can do anything?
The federal government, yes, can do most anything in this country.
There you go. Yes, the federal government can do most anything in this country. This is a California congressman, Pete Stark. He's telling us to our face. Basically, we've become a de facto socialist dictatorship. You can't tell us when to stop. And so the question before the House is it time for a reassertion of states' rights? Is Virginia leading the way towards the emergence of state sovereignty? Is there now a clash between a strong, centralized federal government and the reassertion of states' rights as our founding fathers intended? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Do you believe that there is a new movement to reassert states' rights in America? And do you think it's a good thing? I want to hear from you. Let's go to Anthony in Chicago on line 7. Anthony, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I think it's great that Arizona and Virginia are checking their citizens to make sure that they're legal. But what the heck good does it do us if the federal government is telling us that they don't have the money to do anything with the illegal immigrants, even when they do get them?
Well, Anthony, I mean, they do have the money. That's the lie. You see, what you've been basically seeing for the last 20 years is a massive con and fraud perpetrated upon the American people. Arizona is openly saying, all we need are 3,000 soldiers. That's it. 3,000 to police our borders. and hammer the drug cartels. If we have 100,000 for Afghanistan, if we have 100,000 for Iraq, we're nation building over there, but somehow we can't protect our nation over here. It's a lie. And so what you're now seeing from Arizona and Virginia is they're basically saying, take a hike, get lost. What good is the federal government if it can't protect its own citizens? That's why we have a federal government. And so what you're seeing, Anthony, mark my words, this is just ideological civil war. You now have 20 states following Virginia saying Obamacare is unconstitutional and illegitimate. Never in my lifetime have I seen something like this. And now you have a president, a White House, that's suing its own citizens, its own government in Arizona on the side of lawbreakers and criminals. My friends, this is unprecedented. We're becoming like a third world banana republic. And so what you're seeing, I think, is a resurgence of real conservatism. Federalism, in the true sense of the word, like James Madison and Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson intended. The federal government should control foreign policy and foreign commerce. That's it. That's what Madison wanted. Protect our borders and regulate foreign trade. That's it. Everything else should go to the states. My friends, don't forget this quote. Here is what James Madison said. The powers of the federal government should be few and clearly defined. The powers of the states should be numerous and undefinable, limitless. We have flipped it on its head. The states have become limited in their powers, clearly defined. The federal government, it's wide open. My friends, that is the road to socialism. That is the road to tyranny. And that's why Obama and his Chicago gangsters must be stopped, and stopped they will be by the people and by the states. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. My friends, will Obamacare be broken by the states? Virginia is now moving forward with a lawsuit against the federal government saying that Obamacare will not apply in the state of Virginia. A federal judge has said, yes, you can proceed with your lawsuit. You can read all about it on michaelsavage.com. 20 other states are following Virginia's lead. Will states break Obamacare? I want to hear from you. And my friends, if you want to see what's at stake, here it is in stark black and white. Either you believe in state sovereignty, limited government, and states' rights, or you believe in a huge, powerful federal government with almost no limits, no checks on its power. Because at this town hall meeting, when audience members ask, well, if healthcare is constitutional, what limitations are there on the federal government? Here is what this California leftist has to say. Boys,
if this
roll clip
legislation
27.
Is constitutional, what limitations are there on the federal government's ability to tell us how to run our private lives?
I think that there are very few constitutional limits that would prevent the federal government from rules that could affect your private life.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, there he is. Here's this liberal hack, this Marxist from California, Pete Stark, telling us to our face there's very few rules how to govern our private lives, meaning essentially welcome to Obama's socialist America. We have now become a de facto Chavez-style socialist dictatorship. Pete Stark is telling us that. Pete, so are you telling me that if we want to get involved in all of your personal life, that you wouldn't mind that, Pete? Tell me, Pete, if Obamacare is so good, how come it doesn't apply to you? How come it doesn't apply to any member of Congress or their staff? Tell me, if it's this golden goose that's going to keep laying all these wonderful eggs for everybody, if it's going to be this wonderful healthcare system, tell me, Pete, how come it doesn't apply to you? Tell me, how come most rules and regulations that apply to all of us don't apply to you? How come all of you are cheating on your taxes? How come all of you don't have to pay the crushing taxes that we have? How come you don't have to live with socialized medicine? But we do, huh, Pete? Oh, I get it. It's the old socialist communist game. What applies to a classless society, socialist egalitarianism, that's for the proletariat. That's for everybody else. That's for the people. That's not for the communist ruling class. No, 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 no. They get to keep their dachas, their Mercedes, like John Kerry, his expensive $7 million yacht, which he calls Isabel. I would have called that thing Teresa if I were him, but let that go. No, 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 no. That's good enough for you. The rules don't apply to you. They just apply to us. I get it, Pete. I get it. I understand the game. Let's go to Ron in Sacramento on line three. Ron, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thank you for taking my phone call, Jeff.
My pleasure.
I wanted to actually talk about this illegal immigration problem from Mexico. I've been a licensed contractor for like 28 years, and they've just wiped my career out, you know. If you don't hire them, you're not going to, you know, be able to get the job because it's on a merit system. And, you know, I've just found that I've gone from a self-made millionaire at age 30 to basically nothing at age 51. And I'm very angry that our government is not representing us at all, you know.
Ron, listen, look, you are a red-blooded American. You just want to make a living. You want to provide for yourself and your family. And when you succeed, you hire people and you put food on their table. You're a classic American entrepreneur. Now, Ron, let me be very frank with you. Had you been a corrupt businessman, this is what many contractors are now doing. Had you been giving nice campaign contributions to your local Democrats, and had you been willing to hire illegal immigrants, willing to break the law, things would be very different for you today, Ron. You would still have your business. You would still be making your millions. Everything would be fine. This is what illegal immigration is doing. It is corrupting our society. Our political class is corrupted. Our businesses are corrupted. Our labor force is corrupted. Everything is becoming corrupted. My friends, we are becoming a third world country. That's what illegal immigration means. That's what these yahoos on Capitol Hill don't understand. That this is not simply an issue of racial profiling or supposed discrimination or no. It's about whether we're going to import 20 million poor third world immigrants into America. Are we going to import massive third world labor? Are we going to become a third world country? Or are we going to remain a first world country? That's what the issue is. And so we're breaking our laws, destroying our sovereignty, erasing our borders. Ron, you're not the only one. Millions of Americans are like you. And Ron, it's not just businessmen. Think about the poor legal Hispanic, the ones in Arizona and Texas. This the liberal media won't tell you about. There are Mexican-American families who go back five, six, seven generations. And they are now being kicked out of jobs. Their homes are being plundered. They're being burglarized. They're being beaten. They're living in a state of fear. You think they like you think they like this open border policy? They're the ones that are backing Jan Brewer. Look at those poor African Americans who have to compete for textile jobs, construction jobs, hotel jobs, restaurant jobs. They're being decimated. If the liberal Democrats, if the Al Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, the race baiters in this country, if they gave a damn, one damn about African Americans, they would be opposed to illegal immigration. It is decimating the African-American community, and yet you don't hear a peep. My friends, it is the likes of Michael Savage. It is the likes of me. It is the likes of conservative nationalists who are, in fact, the biggest defenders of Hispanics and African-Americans and the working class poor. We want you to have a living wage. We want you to have a decent job. My friends, we are on the side of the people. They are on the side of the elites. We're on the side of middle America. They're on the side of the criminals. That's what this battle is about. Are you with us or are you against us? Let's go to Kathy in New York. Kathy, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
What you said before about some of the people that work in the Congress living in the states surrounding made me wonder, do you think this is significant that Virginia, of all states, and could be Maryland too, but that they're the ones who are coming out now as it's their judges that are challenging the constitutionality of making Americans buy a product like health care or, like you said, a car or anything? I mean, is there a significance to that? Are these people not doing their job when they're sitting in the Washington, D.C. Congress, yet when they get home, they think, and they put pressure on their local, on their judges, and have their voice be heard that way?
Kathy, that's an excellent question, and I want to thank you for that call. On the surface, it may seem like this is the case, but it isn't. The thing about politicians in Washington, this is what I find most remarkable, is they don't live with their constituents. That's a myth. They live in secluded, gated communities. Or they live in expensive, high-rise condos, condominiums here in Washington, D.C. So, in other words, you see, they're always, especially... Both of them, both parties do it, but the Democrats in particular, oh, diversity, diversity, diversity. We have to have schools that are diverse. We have to have hospitals that are diverse. We have to have workplaces that are diverse. We have to have forced busing. We have to have affirmative action. We have to have racial quotas. Everybody has to be forced into one pot together, regardless of merit. But where do they live? Do they live in diverse neighborhoods like I do? I mean, my two neighbors are African-American. I have Hispanic neighbors. I live in a very interracial community. Fine, outstanding people. We're all working hard. We're all striving to be in the middle class. But they don't. They live among themselves. They're elitist, liberal, guilt-ridden whites. That's what many of them are. And so they don't even see the problem of illegal immigration. They do all their banking on Capitol Hill. They have their boutiques and shops on Capitol Hill. They don't even have to step outside Capitol Hill. Everything is there. And then they have these corporate sponsored trips. They like Charlie Rangel, Good Time Charlie. He's off to the Dominican Republic. They pay for his lavish villa. They're living like kings off the fat of the land. And so what is happening is Northern Virginia is becoming essentially an appendage of the North. It is no longer a southern part, it's no longer part of the South. Northern Virginia is full of professionals, yuppies, staffers who work on Capitol Hill. They're the ones who vote for the Democratic Party. It is still the southern part of the state, which is still fundamentally conservative and traditionalist. And that's the part that is now leading this charge. And so what you're seeing in Virginia is essentially the division in America. Do you believe in big government, open borders, socialism? Or do you believe in limited government, capitalist traditionalism? That's it. It's really that simple. That's the cleavage. I know what side I'm on. I know what has worked historically. I know what has not worked historically. No liberal regime has ever succeeded. Ever. Ever. And that's what our founding fathers warned us against. If we go down this road, my friends, there will be no going back. We have the greatest system of government in the world. I stand with the founding fathers. Who do you stand with? Let's go to Sue in Sacramento on line 10. Sue, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Mr. Cooner. It's quite an honor. I'm glad to get on.
My pleasure.
I want to really help, you know, people understand that this whole campaign that they're going to, all this fear-based propaganda is funded on the backs of the educational and the healthcare system. I don't know if your callers know, but what used to be California Nurses Association is now a huge national union. Their goal is to take over all of healthcare, and they're using our dues. They collect about $2 million a month, and that funds this campaign, and they're using the teachers' unions in a similar way, but they can look good because they're standing behind us. Now, nurses and teachers have had a good reputation, so they use us in all their claims that we support all this propaganda and all this socialism when we don't. And when we've objected, they basically said, would you like to be fired? We can get you fired. It is a horrible thing right now. We have no voice in our union, and they've made it clear that we will never have a voice. They just want our money every month, and they're trying to destroy Kaiser, which is a great HMO, which provides great health care at a good price. They're trying to destroy all private health care in the name of good health care, and they're not. They're not.
Sue, you absolutely nailed it. Look, the labor unions have essentially become hacks of the Democratic Party. And to me, I got to tell you this, what I feel sorry for are all those dues-paying union members. I worked in for a while when I was at the Washington Times. I left the paper for about a year and a half, and I worked at a major Republican policy institute in Washington, D.C. We had our offices literally at the headquarters of the Postal Union of America. This thing was a joke. I remember his name was Danny. He was the head of the Postal Union in that headquarters. This guy would come in every day at 9:30 in the morning. And then I'd ask him, hey, Danny, how's your day like? He goes, frankly, I think I work about an hour a day. I go, what do you mean you work an hour a day? He goes, yeah, Jeff, I come in at about 9:30. I check my emails. I email my wife. I email 30. There's a fruit break. Everybody has to go and have fruit. And they have donuts, and they have muffins paid for by union members. And the break lasts until 11. Then at 11, I kid you not, they have a meeting to plan a meeting. When are they going to have their afternoon meeting? That's the big meeting when they discuss sort of union strategy. So they talk from 11 till 12 when they're going to have their meeting, of course, with some more coffee and donuts. Then at noon, Danny tells me, that's lunch. So he's not back until about 1:15, 1:30. Then they have their meeting at 2. That meeting lasts half an hour where they, quote, strategize, meaning they're just flapping their mouths, talking about where to send their money, who, which candidate to back. At 2:30, what does Danny Boy do? He takes his obligatory hour nap. He goes, yeah, I always take a nap, 2:30, like clockwork. So he snoozes until 3:30. And then at 3:30, he gets up. What's at 3:30? It's the afternoon popcorn break. Popcorn, chips, soda for all the boys and all the girls in the office. So all these staffers go in there and they gorge till 4 o'clock. And then, of course, it's now 4 o'clock. The day's gone, Danny tells me. I can't do anything. So from 4 until 5, he's basically winding the day down. What's he going to do? Well, you know, what he and his wife are going to do? Are they going to see a movie? Are they going to go catch a ball game? Do they have to take the kids out for soccer? That is the day of a typical leader of the postal unions. And all I'm thinking about is the poor schmuck that's out there in the rain and in the snow delivering the mail. Is that what his dues are going for these parasites like Danny? The unions have become a racket. The quicker they go, the better. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Let's see if we have time for one more quick phone call. Jim in Houston on line 4, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much. I'm calling you in regard to the statement about the reemergence of states' rights.
That's right.
We haven't had states' rights, or really individual rights. That was really a point that was settled in 1865 with more and more consolidation of power in Washington that's taken since then. Roosevelt was challenged by a legitimate court, and then Roosevelt simply stated he would stack the court to add more justices. We haven't seen any emergence of states' rights, and we've seen a continual emergence of more and more reach of the federal government.
Jim, bingo, and I want to thank you for that call. Jim, where I would disagree with you is that states' rights was ended by the Civil War. It wasn't. You're right. It began under Roosevelt. But, you know, look, in the 1880s, 1890s, and the 1920s, in a different time in America when we actually had real freedoms in this country and a real self-governing republic, the states were pretty much free to do what they liked. Now, the tragedy is that the segregationists in the South used the states' rights arguments to stop civil rights legislation. And that's what gave states' rights a whole host of issues, from free trade to taxes to abortion. People don't realize this, but every state had pretty much its own individual laws regarding abortion. In other words, we were a self-governing constitutional republic. And that began to change under the New Deal and especially after the Great Society. What Obama is now doing, he is now culminating the liberal socialist revolution that began in the 1930s under FDR. This ideological and political battle has been going on for about 85 years. And now, come this November, we will be at a fundamental crossroads. Do we want to return to our constitutional rights as a free nation and a free people, or will we go down the dark path of European socialism, statism, and eventually dictatorship? This is now the choice that confronts us. And the decision that we now make will now determine the destiny of our republic for generations to come. My friends, this battle is for the heart and soul of America. And my motto is a simple one: no retreat, no surrender. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Michael is out today. I will be filling in for him. Michael, thank you so much once again for the incredible honor and opportunity of guest hosting for you tonight. Michael, as I've said before, your stand against Britain, your stand against the evil political correctness of our time, your stand against the totalitarian clutches of multiculturalism, your heroism grows and grows by the day. And to me, it is stunning that many conservatives, especially right here in Washington, where I am broadcasting from, refuse to even lift a finger for you. And that, to me, will be their eternal shame. And when you are eventually vindicated, when you are eventually taken off that disgusting ban list, there will be many people in this city and across this country in the so-called conservative movement who will be exposed for the frauds and charlatans that they are. Members of the Savage Nation, go to michaelsavage.com. There are some absolutely must-read stories. There's one in particular I want all of you to focus on. You want to talk about the culture of corruption. You want to talk about the hollowness and the lies of Nancy the Piranha Pelosi's claim. You remember in 2006 when she was swept into power as the House Speaker, that she was going to, quote, drain the swamp in Washington, D.C., that she was going to have the most ethical Congress, the most open, honest, ethical Congress in history? Well, all you have to do is go to michaelsavage.com, because there is a story there from the Los Angeles Times. First Rangel, now Waters. As many of you know, Congressman Charlie Rangel is now facing a trial by his peers in the House of Representatives. He has now been charged by the House Ethics Investigative Committee on 13 charges of violating ethics. Good time, Charlie, as we know him here in Washington. Oh, Charlie loves to party. Charlie loves to have a good time. What has Charlie been doing the last 40 years while he's been in office? Has Charlie been working to help African Americans? Has he been working to help his constituents in Harlem? Is Harlem now a better place than it was 40 years ago? Or has Charlie been enriching himself? Has good time Charlie been lining his own pockets? Because it is an open secret in Washington that Charlie Rangel is one of the most corrupt politicians on Capitol Hill. My God, just look at what this man has amassed. Remember, this is on a congressional salary. 4 rent-stabilized apartments in downtown Harlem at a high-luxury condo? That should go to poor people. That's why you have rent stabilization. It's not there for a member of Congress to plunder. He's not some Arab sheik who's got to have multiple occupancies for his harem. He's supposed to be a member of Congress who's supposed to be representing you, the American people. Instead, rather than poor people getting those rent stabilized apartments, he's getting them. And he has not been claiming rental income from all of those apartments. Tell me, good time Charlie, how does a man get that kind of money to purchase himself apartments in downtown Harlem? And then there's his lavish villa in the Dominican Republic. Tell me, good time Charlie, how did you get the money for your lavish villa in the Dominican Republic? How did you afford that on your congressional salary? And my friend, you want to talk about a man drunk with power, drunk with hubris. He uses his official position, even his official stationery, to solicit millions of dollars for a private center in his name at a university in New York, the Charles B. Rangel Center for Public Service. It should be the Charles B. Rangel Center for swindling the American people. How do you swindle the American people and get away with it for 40 years? And now, Charlie Rangel is facing prosecution, and if he is convicted, he will be expelled from the House of Representatives of the Savage Nation. It's not just Charlie. It's not just good time Charlie who's facing serious ethical problems. Oh, no, no, no. Now it's also Marxist Maxine Waters. Marxist Maxine is now facing trouble of her own. Just today, that very same House Ethics Investigative Committee has now come out and said Marxist Maxine is now going to face her own charge. And what is Marxist Maxine charged with? You want to see how they have been pillaging the American people? You want to see what a bunch of crooks and gangsters they are on Capitol Hill? When we were sending out TARP money, when we were giving out those hundreds of billions of dollars to bail out the banks, what did Marxist Maxine do? She lobbied the Treasury Department, used all of her influence to get millions of dollars to be siphoned off to a minority-held bank in California. You may say, Jeff, okay, she's trying to get siphon off some money for this minority-held bank. What's the crime? Here's the kicker. Who do you think is one of the major shareholders of that bank? Who is the one with over $250,000 invested in stocks in that bank? Her husband. They're greasing one palm to grease the other. They're using our taxpayer dollars. Oh, no, 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 not to enrich themselves. No, no, Marxist Maxine would never take the money for herself. It's for that minority bank. Just because it's owned by or partly owned by her husband. Oh, that's a coincidence. It's a coincidence. It's just an accident that he's going to line his pockets when he's invested nearly $250,000 in that bank. This is nothing more than racketeering. This is nothing more than fraud. This is nothing more than influence peddling. That's what's going on. And rather than be a man or a woman about it, rather than be held accountable, rather than taking personal responsibility, let me ask you this. In all honesty, members of the Savage Nation, if you were caught swindling money, if you were caught illegally enriching yourself or enriching your husband or your wife, your spouse, using not even money that's yours, but taxpayer dollars, money that you and I earn through the sweat of our brow, and you were caught with your hand in the cookie jar, would you not say, I'm sorry, I'm guilty, forgive me, let me throw myself on you and plead for mercy? No, 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 no. No, 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 no. Not with these Marxist Democrats. Not with these socialist demagogues. No, 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 no. According to these hustlers on Capitol Hill, it's part of a racist witch hunt. That's right. You knew it was coming. What does Good Time Charlie and Marxist Maxine, what do they have in common? They're both African American. They're both black. You see the conspiracy? So now, many liberal Democrats, including members of the Congressional Black Caucus, are telling every journalist that will listen to them, including yours truly, including my paper, The Washington Times, that this is all part of a racist Office of Congressional Ethics. The OCE, the office that has launched these complaints. No, no, no. There are closet Ku Klux Klanners, closet racists. It's not because they're guilty. It's not because they're corrupt. No. It's because they're black. That's why they're being prosecuted. And who is out there leading that charge? The master race hustler himself. The man who's made millions of dollars shaking down companies and playing the victim card and the race card. Not only the one and only Reverend Al Sharpton. Reverend Al, by the way, as Michael Savage has rightly pointed out, tell me, I want to know, what divinity school did Reverend Al Sharpton graduate from? I want to know, what degree does he have that we can call him Reverend Al? Because I want to find out where he got his degree from. Because for the life of me, I've been looking into this for years. I can't find out where this guy got his degree. What church does he preside over? How is this guy a reverend? But let that go. Never mind that. He's a race hustler, okay? So fine, Reverend Al, we'll humor you, okay? The non-reverend reverend. The non-reverend Al Sharpton comes out and says, you know what? Why is Good Time Charlie and Marxist Maxine being targeted? Is it the facts? Is it the fact that they're guilty? Is it the overwhelming evidence? No, I think it's something else. Wink, wink, it's got to be their race. Boys, roll clip 9.
If you begin to see a pattern of people being called and on to being investigated, allegations, they end up nothing, one would be very naive not to say, well, wait a minute, why should we rush to judgment, particularly when you have Charlie Rangel, who's done so much for his district and the country, and Maxine Waters, and we've already seen two high-profile black leaders hit heavy by the media,
Reverend,
and then nothing's there.
Now, I was don't know which two high-level black leaders he's really talking about. We're not quite sure. Is it Shirley Sherrod? Could that be the one that he's talking about? Could it be Michael Steele? But I don't think he'd be carrying water for Michael Steele. So I don't know what this guy is talking about when it comes to two black leaders. That I don't know what he's talking about. That's another figment of the non-reverend reverend's mind. But let me get to the heart of the matter. Number one, just for argument's sake, they've done so much for the constituents of Harlem or the constituents of South Central Los Angeles. Tell me, what the hell does that have to do with them being crooks? What do I care that Charlie Rangel served in Korea? They keep mentioning that like a tape, like a broken record. Well, Charlie Rangel served his country in the Korean War. How long is he going to use that to legitimize his graft and his thievery and his greed and his crimes? Yes, he took bullets from the Chinese. Yes, he was some kind of a patriot then. But that's a very different Charlie Rangel. Just because you served in a war doesn't now give you the right to be able to plunder and pillage and steal from the American people. Hey, nobody said because you took a bullet, suddenly now we have to write a blank check so you can have rents, rent-stabilized apartments in New York or villas in the Dominican Republic. Where did he get the money to buy that villa? Where did he get the money to buy those rent apartments? How come nobody's looking into that? But my friends, here is the big question that nobody wants to confront. What has Maxine Waters, what has Charlie Rangel really done for their constituents? What has the welfare state done? Nothing, except keep African Americans, keep the constituents of Harlem and South Central LA in a perpetual cycle of dependency and welfare. They have been living off their constituents, enriching themselves as the inner cities get worse. The question before the House is there a racist motive involved in the prosecutions against Rangel and Waters? Is this a racist witch hunt, or are the Democrats desperately spinning the race card to try to prevent the fact that they now preside over the most corrupt Congress in recent memory? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. Let's go to Mike in Albany on line 8. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mr. Cooner, I appreciate it. The reason I'm calling, I'm wondering, why shouldn't we presume Charlie Rangel's innocent?
You mean you think Charlie Rangel is innocent?
What I'm saying is, if we support the Constitution, we support the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. And
well,
yet,
I mean, in a trial, no, you're right, Mike. If this was to be a criminal trial or a civil trial, he would be presumed innocent by the court. But, you know, we're not stupid people. I mean, we can smell corruption when we see it. I mean, this is his own party that's part of this investigative committee. President Obama, even the dear leader, has come out and said Charlie Rangel should step down. 10 House Democrats have called for him to resign. And, Mike, what the Democrats now realize is they have a major political disaster on their hands. They have Good Time Charlie and Marxist Maxine now getting ready for major public trials, which will start in September, and this may last for weeks. And they're going to be the poster children, the poster boy and the poster girl, for the corrupt Congress of the Democrats and the Obama administration. It is a perfect storm. And Republicans are going to point to them and they're going to say, you criticized us in 2006 for Jack Abramoff. Well, look, here you have Rangel. Here you have Maxine Waters. Here you have Sestak Gate. Here you have Romanoff Gate. Here you have Blago Gate. This entire Congress is full of corrupt Democrats. And what is to me most repulsive here, Mike, is that you have the likes of Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and almost everybody in the Congressional Black Caucus saying it's racist. They're being targeted because of the color of their skin. Really? So tell me, why is John Ensign being targeted? Why was Mark Souter of Indiana targeted? What about Eric Massa? Why was he targeted? I mean, you want to play the race card? You're obsessed with people's skin color? It seems to me they were white. So why is it that all of a sudden, because they happen to be black, according to the liberal media and according to Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, suddenly they shouldn't be investigated? Suddenly charges shouldn't be leveled against them? Are they trying to tell us that this is like Zimbabwe, where only whites can be prosecuted and not African Americans? This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Members of the Savage Nation, go to michaelsavage.com. Here is a story from ABC News. If this will not make your blood boil, believe me, nothing will. If you remember, last November, Major Nidal Hassan walked into Fort Hood, Texas, the largest military base in the United States. And as our troops were getting ready to deploy, as many of them were waiting in line for their final health or dental care checkups, all of them unarmed, Nidal Hassan pulled out his revolver, pointed it at the crowd, and yelling out, "Allahu Akbar," Allah is great, began to pump bullets into the crowd. By the time the carnage was done, 13 of our brave service members were dead, 32 permanently crippled and wounded. And you would think that this would have woken America up to the threat of radical Islam within our own borders, the enemy within. Go to michaelsavage.com, because as Major Nidal Hassan, as that butcher, as that animal, is sitting in a jail in Texas waiting for his hearing in October, he is still getting paid. He is receiving $6,000 a month. The checks keep coming in. And according to the Army, I kid you not, I couldn't make this up. You're not going to believe me. You say, come on, Jeff, you're exaggerating. You're exaggerating now to be funny. You're being absurd to try to point out an absurdity. No, check the story. He's eligible for a $15,000 bonus incentive. What, to kill more soldiers? Is that the incentive? You mean you got to hit 15? You got to hit 20? You got to hit the magic mark so you can get the full $15,000? Literally, the Army's saying, you know, he's still eligible. Not only is he getting his $6,000, but he's also eligible for a $15,000 bonus. It's a bonus, an incentive bonus for him. And no financial institution will cash this man's check. His lawyer has now come out and said this is discrimination against Nidal Hassan. Discrimination against terrorists, discrimination against Islamic jihadists, because, yes, he's bringing in $6,000 a month. The Army keeps paying him, but no bank refuses to take him on as a customer. Nobody will allow him to open a checking account. So here you have the lawyer now claiming that banks are discriminating against Nidal Hassan because he's a jihadist. Can you imagine now a poor schmuck, some poor guy at a bank, the manager of a bank, and he gets this application? Hold on. Here, I'm in Texas now. I'm a poor schmuck in Texas. Hold on. Is that the guy that killed 13 of our soldiers there at Fort Hood? And he wants to open up the doggone checking account here in my bank? Absolutely not. I don't want his money. That's dirty money. That's blood money. I ain't going to honor him. Oh, no. Suddenly I'm a racist. I'm a racist against jihadists. I'm discriminating against jihadists. That's right. Hey, Al, where are you, Reverend, non-Reverend Al? Jesse Jackson, where are you? Are you going to picket those banks? Is that discrimination against minorities, against Muslims? And have you noticed? Look at the gall. Just look at the gall. Now you have this terrorist, this butcher, with the blood of 13 service members on his hands, and he still has the nerve, through his lawyer, not only to insist to get paid, but to demand that banks cash his checks. You have members of Congress who are corrupt and stealing money and siphoning money to enrich themselves and their family members. Racist. You have a governor of Arizona who is trying to defend her own citizens and police the border. Racist. Tell me, when did common sense become racist? And according to Defense Secretary Robert Gates, when Nidal came in and slaughtered 13 service members and wounded 32, no, that wasn't a terrorist. It's all peace. You may not know it, but 13 dead and 32 wounded, that's a sign of peace. Here is Robert Gates saying, hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil. This wasn't a terrorist act. Don't even talk to me about it. Boys, roll the clip.
Based on the facts that you have now about Hassan and what happened that day, is it fair to characterize the shooting as a terrorist attack?
I'm just not going to go there. First of all, as the senior person in the departmental chain of command, I am the least able to render opinions on these kinds of issues.
No, you can't speak out on that. You can speak out on the Harvard professor with the cop. Then the dear leader can come out and blame the white cop. Then we can pass judgment. You may not read the Arizona law, but that's okay. Eric Holder and the dear leader and Janet Napolitano can speak out against it. But suddenly, this major, who for years was in contact with a top Al-Qaeda cleric, who was passing around a card, literally, saying Mujahideen, holy warrior, on his card, who goes out and says Allahu Akbar and slaughters 13 of our soldiers. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. Don't go there. Terrorist act. I don't think so. Do you think that it is right for the U.S. Army to be sending this man $6,000 a month in pay? And more than that, what do you make of the lawyer's claims that somehow the banks are obligated to cash in his checks? Is that a form of racism, or do the banks not have a right to decide which clients they will take? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Let's go to your calls. Let's go to Charles in Indiana on line 8. Charles, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. I can't believe they're paying this guy. I can't believe it. They're paying this guy $6,000 a month. He just murdered 13 innocent people who are defending our freedom, who are willing to defend our freedom and to do the things that some of us can't do. And they're paying this guy? And then to top it off, like you said, the banks are cashing this? I mean, where's the bank management? Where's
No, Charles, the banks are not cashing it. That's the point. The banks refuse to cash it. And the lawyer is now coming out. Hassan's lawyer is saying that's discrimination. And now they're talking about a lawsuit against the banks. They want to sue the banks to force them to cash in the checks. And to me, Charles, this is the story. I mean, I understand. Look, the banks should never. Hey, if I was running a bank, I wouldn't cash this guy's check. You want to sue me? See me in court. I'll see you in court. And even if you force me to cash in his check, I still won't cash in his check. What are you going to do? Throw me in jail? I don't want his blood money. Okay? But what about our military? What the hell has happened to our military? This is what I find remarkable. Talk about the most politically correct military we've ever had. Where's Robert Gates? Where's our five-star generals? You mean to tell me, A, you can't call this act an act of terrorism? What was it? An act of religious peaceful coexistence? An act of love? What was it if that wasn't an act of terrorism? And still, that you think this guy deserves to get $6,000 a month? What does he need to do? I mean, literally, can you imagine? What if this guy, would he get more? I guess he gets his $15,000 bonus if he killed 20 or 25, if he hits the magic number. Look at what a joke our military is becoming. This is what these politically correct liberals are doing to our military. Gays openly serving in the military. Right now, in the middle of two wars, they want homosexuals to openly serve in the military, even though every top expert, every top general, every top commander has said it will destroy unit cohesion and morale. Name me one effective military. The Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, you think they allow gays in the military? The Israelis have tried it and they said it's been a disaster. Everywhere you look, France, the Netherlands, Germany, they've tried it, it's been a disaster. Flies with Iran? You think this flies with Russia? You think this flies with China? You think this flies with North Korea? Look at what we're doing. And Charles, let me be very honest with you. What fundamentally, on a macro level, is the difference between this, paying this gunman, this murderer, this terrorist, $6,000 a month, and us giving free wealth care, free welfare, health care, education, and jobs to millions and millions of illegal immigrants, many of them murderers, rapists, Felipe Calderon, the president of Mexico, has openly said, we have a poverty problem. We also have a poverty program. It's send them all up north. Let the dumb gringo pay for them. Let the dumb gringo subsidize them. Hey, he's stupid enough to take them in. And if some poor schmuck, some poor peasant in Arizona, some little governor says, hey, you know what? We're being overrun here. They'll sue them. They'll do our dirty work for us. So you tell me. Political correctness is destroying every institution in America. That's what this is a sign of. Now the military has been infected. The last institution. It's the one institution the liberals couldn't break. They're getting around to it. Let's go to Larry in New York on line four. Larry, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks so much for taking my call. My comment is, after spending a lifetime in the military, in the Army as an enlisted man and the Navy as an officer, I hate to call him a man, this thing's paying allowances should have been confiscated. Somebody is taking this on their own authority to pay this guy $6,000 a month. The Army pays in cash. The finance office will cash his check. He doesn't need a bank account. He doesn't need any of this coddling. And I don't even think the Army wants to cash that check.
Larry, I can listen. I mean, I don't have inside sources on this story, but I'll tell you what my guess is. And I'm like 99.999% I'm right. This is the Saudi lobby. I have seen the Saudi lobby here in Washington, D.C. I have to tell you, you remember Oliver Stone last week flapping his mouth again, that leftist lunatic, that liar, that Marxist going on about the Jewish lobby in Washington. The Jewish lobby has messed up. He used another word, but messed up our foreign policy in the Middle East. The Jewish dominated media. No. The most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C. has nothing to do with the Jews or Israel. That's a myth. Yes, AIPAC is powerful. No question about it. It's the Saudis. The Saudi lobby is the most powerful lobby in Washington. They own both the Democrats and the Republicans. Think about it. Why is it that we are obsessed with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? Just think about it for a second. Why? There are many other more pressing issues in the Middle East. Iran, Iraq, Syria. I could go on and on. Afghanistan, Pakistan. These are much more serious issues. We are obsessed with the, quote, peace process because that's what the Saudis tell us. That's what the Saudis want us to focus on. You have to solve the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. In other words, you have to wipe the Jews off the face of the earth. You have to give the Palestinians their own state. That's the only way to have peace in the Middle East. That's what the Saudis want. It is the Saudis who bankrolled most of Al-Qaeda. It is the Saudis who are funding thousands of madrasas all over the Middle East, all over Europe, right here in Washington, in Northern Virginia. The mosque that Nidal Hassan attended was financed by the Saudis. They paid for that Yemeni cleric, Anwar Alawi. Yet nobody mentions the Saudis. Have you noticed that? They're not on anybody's list of the axis of evil. No, they're our allies. I'll bet you dollars to donuts. The Saudis have told the American government, hands off Nidal Hassan. You don't call him a terrorist. You don't call him an Islamic jihadist. Have you noticed under Obama, we don't use the word extremist or Muslim terrorist or Islamic fascism or Islamic radicalism. That's forbidden. That's verboten, as the Germans would put it. No, 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 no. The Saudis say jump and we say how high, because they have bought us hook, line and sinker. We are a wholesale subsidiary of Saudi Arabia. And the number two most powerful lobby is that of China. What you have seen, my friends, for the last 40 years is the greatest republic in the history of the world sold its soul. We sold our nationhood. We sold our assets. We sold our capital for black crude, for black money. That's what happened to this great republic. Our founding fathers warned us, if you allow foreign lobbyists, if you allow foreign interests to buy up your country, this republic will fall. We need a new nationalism. It is time to put America first. America for the Americans. That's what I say. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Let's go to John in Houston on line six. John, you're on the Savage Nation.
You guys, you've got some great points, but we still have to remember the Uniform Code of Military Justice and military rules. Even though this man has committed obviously atrocity and murder and a horrible crime, he still bears that rank until he has been convicted by a military court. So he is eligible to draw pay, and banks have the right to refuse service to anyone, and I am glad they are refusing him service off base. And I really hope that a jury of his peers or the military judge in whatever case it is finds him guilty.
John, look, you make a good point. I understand he still has his rank. He hasn't been officially stripped of it. But between you and me, aren't we arguing semantics? I mean, we know he did it. He's confessed that he did it. There are a room full of witnesses that he did it. I mean, he did it. So why should we continue to pay this man $6,000? Isn't this an affront to the servicemen who are fighting and dying in Iraq and Afghanistan? Isn't this an affront to everybody who risked their lives for this country to see that our taxpayer dollars, John, that's your money. That's my money. That's $6,000. We're never going to get that back. That's money he keeps getting month after month. Why the hell should he be getting our money after slaughtering 13 of our boys and girls and 32 of our and crippling 32 of our other soldiers? It's offensive. Frankly, it's sick. It's morally perverse. It's sick.
What are you in the middle? Isn't it? Out as a terrorist. If they do that, then they can define him as an enemy combatant, and then they can stop the payments and throw him in jail or worse.
I mean, John, is he not already a terrorist and an enemy combatant? I mean, what else do we need? I mean, literally, does he have to have terrorist stamped on his forehead? I mean, how long are they going to drag out this trial and then have us to continue pay for his salary? I mean, if I was the Secretary of Defense, I would have stepped in and said, this guy doesn't get a bloody penny. Let him rot in jail. And then when he gets his tribunal, we'll find him guilty and we'll hang him. That's, to me, he should be hanged. The sooner the better. But thanks for your call. Thanks for your call, John. Let's go to Rob in Las Vegas on line one. Rob, I got about a minute. Go, baby.
Yeah, I think the bank should cash the checks because,
why?
Like he said, they're going to hang them, so there'll be some money there for them to collect. So if they stop paying them, the families are going to be harder up without any money to be able to collect on the civil lawsuit. So they should cash the checks.
Rob, look, I understand your sentiment, and I want to thank you for that call. But when you really think about it, that's our money. I mean, he's a major in the Army. We pay him through taxpayer dollars. It's not like he's some private sector guy who had his own job, and we can go get his own money. So to me, stop paying him. He shouldn't get a penny, not one red cent, and he should rot in jail and eventually be hanged. Now, as for his other assets, yes, the family should go after him and take everything that he has. But look, he's not a rich man, A, and B, I mean, you've lost your son. You've lost your daughter. Money can never bring them back. This is what is so repulsive about this. My friends, if he's a terrorist, let's throw the book at him. We shouldn't be writing $6,000 checks. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yeah. Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Michael, I just want to thank you one more time, my good buddy, for the incredible honor and privilege of filling in for you tonight. You have an incredible show, an incredible audience. And Michael, what can I say? You are the only true independent conservative who has put together, what, 8-10 million listeners on your own, fighting for language, borders, and culture, a real traditionalist, nationalist conservatism, as opposed to the globalist conservatism that you see from all the other phonies on the talk radio right. Michael, what the people of Britain understand, and what the people of America understand, is that your fight is our fight. And what the British government has done is they have capitulated to the Muslim extremists in their midst. And for all of you out there, members of the Savage Nation, go to michaelsavage.com. There is a story that you have to read. It's in the Daily Telegraph in London. And the heading, let me just read to you the heading. Israeli president says Muslims turning England anti-Semitic. Israel's president, Shimon Peres, in an interview, has now stated the obvious. He is now letting the cat out of the bag. He has told the British, because of your massive, swelling Muslim population and the growing radicals in their midst, those that call for Sharia law to be imposed upon the English people, that call openly for the British government to be toppled, for women to be covered in burqas from head to toe, for the right of Muslim men to stone and murder adulterers, women that they believe pose a threat to Islamic society, their call for the murder of Christians and Jews and the infidels. In East London, this is their regular chant. In mosque after mosque, in radical Muslim group after radical Muslim group, with one protest after another, they are openly calling for the triumph of a world Muslim empire, for the defeat of Britain and America and Israel. And as Shimon Peres says, this growing Muslim fundamentalism, this growing Islamic radicalism in Birmingham, in London, in Liverpool, in towns and villages all across England and the United Kingdom, is now forcing the British government to be increasingly anti-Israeli, deeply pro-Arab, and in many ways anti-Semitic. And Michael, let me say something that no one else has said. That's why I'm known as the last honest man in Washington. I don't care. If they want to come after me, let them come after me. I believe you were targeted by the British government, not just because of your nationalist conservatism, not just because you have the guts to speak out against the evil imperialist ambitions of radical Islam. To state the obvious, we are in a clash of civilizations. And until radical Islam is stopped and defeated, this war will continue. And we are now living in the twilight of the West, unless we rally and defend Western Christendom and Western civilization. Michael, they're not just looking to marginalize you. They're not just coming after you to delegitimize conservative opinion, to delegitimize you. I believe it was more than that. It was because you were Jewish. Everybody knows that you're pro-Israel. Everybody knows that you have a Judaic view of the world. That's why you're a moral traditionalist. That's why you speak out against pornography. You speak out against abortion. You speak out against gay marriage. You have openly said, as a practicing Jew, I, on moral grounds, have to oppose this. They knew you were Jewish. And they knew by sacrificing you they were not just sacrificing you on the altar of liberal multiculturalism. They were pandering to the radical Islamists in their midst in Britain. That's why they went after you. And my friends, Shimon Peres is right. There is a growing anti-Semitism in England. There is a growing anti-Semitism all across continental Europe. We are reliving the 1930s. Think about it. America is in an economic crisis. We have a socialist president in the White House. The American public is now war weary. Today, it is because of Iraq and Afghanistan. Then it was because of World War I. We are losing our military, economic, and cultural self-confidence. And everywhere across the world, the forces of fascism are on the march. Then it was German, Italian, and Japanese fascism, Nazi fascism. Today it is Islamic fascism. Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Syria, the West Bank and Gaza, and increasingly Paris, Berlin, Amsterdam, and London. You want to see what kind of hate emanates from the lips of many of these radical Islamists in London? You want to see how they despise our very civilization? You want to see how they seek to impose Sharia law? Here is just a taste of what they shout at the obscenities they yell and scream at when they're at their so-called protests. Here is a protest in London. Look at the hate, and you tell me if that is not the language of fascism and of Islamic extremism. Boys, roll the clip.
Down, down, USA!
Down, down, USA!
Nuke, nuke, Washington!
Nuke, nuke, Washington!
Bomb, bomb, Pentagon!
Bomb, bomb, Pentagon!
Death to Tony Blair!
Death to Tony Blair!
There you go. Nuke, nuke, Washington. Nuke, nuke, Washington. Oh, that's, I can see the peace. Oh, oh, it emanates peace. It screams peace. Oh, it's all peace. It's peace. It's got to be peace. Beautiful peace. Oh, very peaceful. Very loving. I can see that. Very compassionate. Oh, I like that. I can see the possibility for a mutual tolerance and coexistence. Oh, I can see that. I can see that. I understand you're all liberals. You're all liberals underneath those robes. I understand that. It's just a little bit. It's a little different kind of liberalism. That's all. That's all. That's all it is. The enemy is in London. The enemy is across Europe. And slowly but surely, the enemy is making inroads here in America. And that's what the Major Nadal Hassan case amounts to. When that attack at Fort Hood happened, we saw homegrown terror rear its ugly head. We saw a mass atrocity committed on American soil. Here you had a major in the American Army, sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution, sworn to uphold and defend the American people. And what was he doing? He was in constant communication with clerics close to Al-Qaeda. He was on radical jihadist website after radical jihadist website. Members of the military knew that he was a Muslim extremist. He gave seminars when he was supposed to talk about clean water, when he was supposed to talk about how to have a clean environment. He was there preaching about the glories of holy war, that it was the duty of Muslims to kill American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And what did all of his peers say? We didn't want to upset Major Nadal Hassan by complaining. We didn't want to be called Islamophobic. We didn't want to be called racists or bigots, so we kept quiet. But his commanders knew, and in fact, they promoted him every step of the way. He had mediocre report after mediocre evaluation. This guy he wasn't even a good psychiatrist. He was a horrible psychiatrist. And yet he was promoted to the rank of major. And then, on that fateful day, he slaughtered 13 of our soldiers, wounding and crippling 32 others. And what does the Army do? Just go to michaelsavage.com. the Army will pay him, is paying him $6,000 a month. Your money. My money. He's getting a regular paycheck. And now his lawyer is running around saying the banks are discriminating against his client. That's right. His client is the victim because they don't want to cash in his checks. As if the banks are somehow obligated to cash in the checks of a jihadist terrorist. Yeah, they have to. I guess they get special privilege status, special protected status. I get it. Affirmative action for jihadists. We should have a jihadist. Well, I want them now in academia. I want them now in top corporate boards. They got to break through the glass ceiling. I think jihadists have been discriminated against too long in this country. I really do. I think, you know what? How dare they not cash in this man's checks? How dare they? Hey, his money's as good as anybody. Come on now. It's $6,000. It's $6,000. So what? He slaughtered 13 soldiers. So what? He crippled 32 others. It's peace. You don't know that it's peace, but it's peace. My friends, England has capitulated to anti-Semitism. England has capitulated to radical Islam. And Michael Savage has paid the price. And now, slowly but surely, our own military is capitulating to Islamic radicalism in its own midst. Now we are paying Major Nidal Hassan $6,000 a month as he sits in a jail waiting for his hearing. And my question to you is a simple one. Is this the return of the 1930s? Are we seeing anti-Semitism rear its ugly head? 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Let's go to our blazing phone lines. Marshall in South Carolina on line 2. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, the comment I wanted to make is the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations.
Sure. Go ahead.
Sounds kind of like Pearl Harbor.
How do you mean?
Well, you got your two people that hate each other. You know, U.S. and Japan, Israel and Palestine. They're forceful, direct negotiations.
I got you, Marshall. I got the overall point. Essentially, is there going to be a war between the Palestinians and the Israelis? Will this trigger off a world war like what happened in 1941, December 7th, when the Japanese attacked the United States at Pearl Harbor? Yes, Marshall, I think your analogy to some degree holds, except it's not the Palestinians. The Palestinians have been used by the Arab states to wage a proxy war against Israel. They don't give a damn about the Palestinians. Many Palestinians are rotting in refugee camps in Syria, in Lebanon, in many countries across the Middle East, and they've been kept there from generation to generation. If they cared about the Palestinians, they would offer them citizenship in all of these Arab countries. They want to use them as a weapon, as a spear, aimed at the heart of the Jewish state to annihilate the Jews. The real enemy in all of this, Israel's greatest enemy, the West's greatest enemy, is that of Iran. The Persian Hitler of our time, Mahmoud I am a nut job, Ahmadinejad, is now on the verge of acquiring the nuclear bomb. And just as the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor using kamikaze tactics, in other words, they were the first suicide bombers. Iran is willing to launch a nuclear attack against Israel, and if it means sacrificing the lives of tens of millions of Iranians, they will do it. They are the ultimate kamikazes. And this is why I have been arguing for over a year now. If we are to prevent another Holocaust, if we are to prevent another world war, then it is up to the West, especially Israel and the United States, to bomb all of Iran's nuclear installations and facilities. If we do not bomb Iran soon, Iran will bomb the Jews. And then Israel will have no choice but to retaliate, and you will see a nuclear holocaust in the Middle East. My friends, this is the 1930s all over again. And my question to you is a simple one. If you were alive in 1937 or 1938, would you not assassinate Adolf Hitler? I would. I don't care if I had to rot in jail for the rest of my life. I often think about this. If I was alive then, knowing what I know now, knowing the 50 million dead, knowing the war, the devastation, I would assassinate him in a second. Why is Ahmadinejad still living? I don't know. It is time for Israel to take him out, and take him out now. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Tom in New York on line 10. Tom, thanks for patiently holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Jeff Cooner filling in for the Archangel of America, Michael Savage. That's red, white, and blue dynamite, baby.
How are you, Tom?
Jeff, it's great to talk to you on a national scale. Jeff, the similarities to 1930 are eerie. Adolf Hitler schnookered a German nation. He was supposed to be their economic savior. We've got Ahmadinejad saying he needs uranium for medical purposes. He's full of soup. We know what he wants to do. He's announced the annihilation of Israel. Does the United States have enough left to save the day, Jeff? We're stretched thin. We've got North Korea. We've got Iraq. We've got Afghanistan. It's going to take a miracle, Jeff. I know what my rosaries are going for, and that's to save Israel and to save the free world. God bless.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Tom. Thank you for that call. Look, let's put our cards on the table, as the Germans would say. What has happened in the last 10 years has been an unmitigated disaster. We first went into Afghanistan, toppled the Taliban, rightly, hammered and broke al-Qaeda's back, and then what happened? Rather than following them where they went, into neighboring Pakistan, into the mountains of the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, George Bush made the biggest mistake of his presidency. He got us involved in nation-building in Afghanistan. We were no longer there to win wars. We were there to build roads, bridges, factories, hospitals. We tried to make Afghanistan the Switzerland of Asia. And we spent tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars in a social engineering project that was bound to fail from the beginning. When we toppled that fascist dictator, Saddam Hussein, into me, a tremendous blow to advance democracy and human rights across the Middle East, to show the world that we would stop Islamic fascism wherever it was. Instead of toppling him and moving on, what did we do? We again got involved in the hubris, the arrogance of nation building. And so now our military is stuck in a quagmire, in two wars, overextended, broken. And now we have the dear leader, the comrade in chief, that con man in the White House, Barack Hussein Obama, doubling down on our failed war in Afghanistan. Now we're adding 30 more troops, turning Afghanistan into Obama's Vietnam. And all the time, as our troops are bleeding as we are draining precious blood and treasure in the sands of Iraq, in the mountains and caves of Afghanistan, there the Hitler of our time rises and rises and rises. And now Ahmadinejad is maybe 6 months to a year away from acquiring the ultimate weapon of mass destruction, the nuclear bomb. And now the West has lost its will. Just as in 1938 and 39, when the rubber hit the road, when it was time to stand up to the expansionist, aggressive forces of fascism, to the march of a fascist army, the West is now silent. And now it is up to the Jews of Israel. Now the only question is, will Netanyahu bomb Iran? Will he annihilate Iran's nuclear facilities before Iran annihilates the Jewish state? I don't understand the thinking of most Jews in Israel. I don't understand the Israeli government. Wasn't the Holocaust enough? Didn't 6 million being thrown into the gas ovens teach you to never compromise or flirt with evil? When you have a genocidal regime that openly says publicly, we want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. As Ahmadinejad said, this stinking, rotten Zionist regime will come to an end. You mean to tell me you don't have enough of incentive to take them out? What has happened to Israel? This was a country that won 3 wars against the Arabs. They have the most ferocious, powerful military in the Middle East. And now they have been neutered by political correctness, by international criticism. They have been betrayed by Obama. My friends, we are reliving the 1930s. And now the question that befalls us is really the most important question that a nation or a people can face. Where is the Churchill among us? Where is the leader who will rise up and say, no surrender? We shall fight them on the beaches. We shall fight them in the forests. We shall fight them in the streets. We shall fight them on our shores. We shall never surrender. Where is the Churchill to warn us of this Nazi dictator in Iran? Nowhere. Everywhere you see appeasement. Everywhere you see people lying to the American public of how bad things are getting in the Middle East. My friends, freedom is not free. It must be defended and fought every generation. And the question that is now facing us is this: who will defend our freedom against the Iranian Nazis? That's the question. Because, my friends, we only have a couple of years. If Israel doesn't do it, who will? And if we don't do it, who will? As Ronald Reagan once put it, if not us, who? If not now, when? Let's go to Mike in Florida on line 7. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure, Mike.
It's been my layman's opinion, from what I've seen over the last 20 years, is that this new anti-Semitism has kind of piggybacked on Islamic causes and Islamic influence. In my case, from my experience, primarily with the pro-Palestinian movement, which I was a supporter of for a long time, and the final straw that broke my naive outlook was this flotilla charade by Turkey, which was such an obvious exercise in using these Palestinian people as pawns. And it really opened up my eyes that a lot of these causes are basically just excuses for anti-Semites to jump on and give them a cover, a politically correct cover, for their natural dislike of Jews in Israel.
Mike, you hit the nail right on the head. As somebody who taught American history at McGill University, as somebody who originally came from academia, I'm a historian by training. I have actually taught in the university system. I know Barack Obama's worldview like the back of my hand. They are my former colleagues. They are my former teachers. They are my former professors. What is the thinking driving Obama? What is the thinking driving the liberal left? Essentially, in their view, Israel has now replaced Western imperialism. They are like ancient France or Imperial Britain or Imperial Germany. They really believe that Israel is a Western colonizing power, which is subjugating and colonizing the Palestinians. And so for them, the struggle for the Palestinians against Israel is not just against the Jewish state. It is against the West itself. It is against what they believe is Western imperialism, the sins of the West, the evils of the West. Obama himself admitted in his autobiography, don't take my word for it, read his autobiography, who were his mentors? All of them that were, quote, post-colonial Marxists, meaning that the poverty in the third world, the so-called oppression in the third world, is because of America, is because of Europe, is because of dead white males. Who are the ultimate white males in the Middle East? It is the Israelis. Everybody knows they are the bulwark of Western civilization, the outpost of the West in the Middle East. That's why they must fall. And everybody knows the Palestinians don't want peace. It's been offered repeatedly. The Israelis have repeatedly said in 2000 at Camp David, you will have 98% of the West Bank and Gaza, including East Jerusalem, as your capital. Yasser Arafat didn't even, not only did he say no, he didn't even come back with a counteroffer. He didn't even say, no, give me 100%. He dismissed it out of hand. And as he said, if I sign this deal, I am signing my own death warrant. In other words, his own people, the surrounding Arab states, would never allow him to have an independent Palestinian state. What they want is to annihilate Israel. That's what this has always been about. And this rise of anti-Semitism, notice, with the massive importation of third world Muslim immigration all across Europe, with the radicalization of Muslim populations all across Europe, anti-Semitism has grown. Anti-Semitism and the Islamicization of Europe have gone hand in hand. You make your own conclusions. Have an open borders policy combined with multiculturalism without any effort to assimilate your immigrant populations, you will have disaster on your hands. That's what's happening in Europe, and sadly, that's what's happening in America until we say enough is enough. Let's go to Victor in Hartford, Connecticut, on line one. Victor, I got about a minute. Go, baby.
Jeffrey, thanks for taking my call. Basically,
my pleasure, Victor.
I think the crux of this entire problem is political correctness. And political correctness, of course, is one of the late 19th or 20th century phenomenons that had that occurred in World War II, we'd all be speaking German or Japanese. The fact of the matter is when you take on a tough problem and combating someone who wants to your country, your way of life to be destroyed, you have the worst kind of, we're involved in wars that are the most politically incorrect thing we have to do. People have to bite down hard and realize that there's going to be some sacrifices that have to be made and tough decisions that have to be made. And some people aren't going to like it. Unfortunately, we as a society, we're not trained to do that. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Victor. No, look, political correctness, which is a form of liberal indoctrination, that's what political correctness is. You cannot state the obvious. I was at a recent debate in Washington, D.C. I debated Bruce Fein, a nationally known columnist. He's a libertarian, one of these anti-war libertarians. And so there I was, arguing him and his fellow Ron Paul supporters. There is no threat from radical Islam. It doesn't exist, according to them. It's a figment of my imagination. According to them, literally, Jeff Kooner is a crazy militarist. That I need some enemy after the end of the Cold War. This is the argument these people make. After the end of the Cold War, with the evil Ruskies defeated, somehow we needed something to fill our psyche with. We needed something to fulfill us. So we were spinning a globe and saying, aha, let's invade Iraq. Aha, let's invade Afghanistan. Yep, as I was telling them, you know what, guys? I got to meet George Bush. I got and Donald Rumsfeld. Georgie and Donald. I'm meeting them after this debate. We're going to spin the globe again. Maybe Ireland. I don't know. Maybe Switzerland. Oh, I never liked France. Maybe I'll say we bomb France. This is the perverse mindset that they live in, that the enemy is America, that we are an empire. when everywhere around us, Morocco, Algeria, Egypt, Jordan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, everywhere around the world, the Philippines, Yemen, I could go on and on. Every country is saying we are facing a radical Islamist insurgency. Radical Islam is spreading around the world. They seek to impose a world Muslim empire. They're the real imperialists. But no, no, according to the radical left and the crazy libertarian right, no, 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 America is the enemy. America is the empire. This is a form of self-loathing. This is a form of self-hatred. That's what political correctness is. America is always racist. Whites are always racist. America can do no good. Capitalism is evil. And don't call evil by its name. No, you may risk offending people. Can you imagine if in World War II we said we were not at war with Nazism? We were not at war with fascism. No, we're offending Germans by saying we're in a war with Nazi Germany. We're offending the Japanese by saying we're in a war with Imperial Japan. We would have gotten our clocks cleaned. My friends, there's nothing bigoted about saying there's a problem with radical Islam. There is. 10 to 15% of a billion Muslims around the world, either we recognize that reality and fight it, or we go quietly into the good night. And Sharia law, the moral and spiritual darkness that is radical Islam, will triumph or flight. This is Jeff Kooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner sitting in for Michael Savage. Let's go to Bob in Kansas City on line 9. Bob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Bob.
First, let me state that I'm a Sergeant Major, United States Army, retired, so I think I know from whence I speak. Our first premise under even the Uniform Code of Military Justice is that all men are... let me think of it here. We're all equal under the law.
And we're all innocent until proven guilty, correct?
Proven guilty, right, correct. Innocent until proven guilty. Now, barring that, had I been the policeman, they'd have never carried him off of that battlefield alive. That's number one. Had I been the Secretary of Defense, I'd have declared him a combatant, and he wouldn't have any rights. So he's still got his rights under the law, and that's from the Constitution, and I swore to uphold and defend the Constitution, and I still do.
Well, Bob, I understand that, but don't you think it's obscene that you and I and all of the members of the Savage Nation and the American taxpayers are paying this man $6,000 a month? I mean, Nadal Hassan, we should still be paying his salary after the crimes that he committed? Those were war crimes. This man is a war criminal. So now we're in the business of giving war criminals $6,000 a month?
What do we become if we don't uphold the law?
Well, let me ask you this, Bob. If we denied him his $6,000 a month because we all know he did it, he admitted that he did it. So we all know he's guilty. In fact, by your own admission, if you were there, if you were a police officer, you would have shot him. You would have killed him on the spot. So let me ask you this. Are we suddenly a fascist state? If we deny him his $6,000, have we suddenly become Hitler's Germany? I don't think so. I mean, I think it's obvious. This man is a terrorist. He is an enemy combatant. Why should the Constitution apply to him? It should apply to you. It should apply to me. It should apply to American citizens who aren't terrorists, who haven't picked up arms against their own government. But he is a traitor. So why should we, a traitor who has disavowed the Constitution, declared war upon his own people, declared war upon the American government, declared war upon his own colleagues. Those were his colleagues, for God's sakes. And we still got to pay him $6,000 a month? Bob, respectfully, I disagree. I understand you're a major. I understand you're in the Army. I understand you know what you're talking about when it comes to military affairs. But believe me, this guy isn't worth our Constitution. He isn't. He's a scumbag. and we should have hung him a long time ago. Let's go to Helen in Virginia. Helen, literally, I got 30 seconds. Go.
Yes, Jeff. Great to hear from you. I love you. I love Michael Savage's too. I listen to everybody. You guys are my best. Okay. Getting back to this Hope deal, I wonder why it's been taking so long for this trial. It should have been ASAP in the first place under the circumstances and the conditions that he said he's guilty, et cetera, et cetera.
Helen, I'll tell you why in a nutshell. It's because he has not been tried as an enemy combatant. And so now he's being given due process. My friends, radical Islamists don't deserve our Constitution. They deserve our contempt. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, filling in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. God bless you. God bless America.